care of wounds, right? And when we say a wound, we mean like there's some kind of a break in the skin such that the person is bleeding. Like that's what we're talking about. So from a medical perspective, there are four steps to taking care of a wound. As I always say, this is not medical advice. This is just, you know, what I've learned. Please, you know, ask a doctor for more. But basically, your first step in taking care of a wound is? Anybody know? Nope. Something before that. Sorry?
Applying pressure.
Applying pressure can be useful. But treating it, I mean, right? So, no, cleaning and disinfecting go together. Stopping the bleeding. Pressure can be a part of that. I don't know if that's what you meant. Okay. So, yeah, your first step is to stop the bleeding. Right? This is a lesson in life. This is not only a lesson in wound care, this is a lesson in life. Your first step is to stop the bleeding. Your second step after that is indeed cleaning the wound. You might accomplish that with antibiotic ointments, hydrogen peroxide, saline applied under pressure. But cleaning the wound is your second step. Your third step is closing the wound. You know, often people kind of assume that that's happening first, but that's a bad idea. First thing you have to do is to stop the bleeding and clean it. Then you close the wound. There are different ways to close a wound. One is what's called a butterfly bandage or Steri-Strips. It's an adhesive that you use to bring the two sides of the wound together. It's better for kind of a regular wound, meaning like an even type of a cut, a short type of a cut. And the advantage of this kind of I don't know what to call it exactly. I guess it's not a suture. But the advantage of closing a wound in this way, as opposed to, let's say, using stitches, is, number one, you don't need anesthetic, right? There's no pain involved in just, you know, sealing it up with this. There's no scarring involved with it. And there's no long-term care of the wound. Like, you just, you know, you use this bandage and you're done. Stitches would be a different thing. Stitches are needed generally if you have a jagged wound, so the two sides aren't going to come together smoothly. It's also needed if you have like a long cut. It can happen sometimes for wounds on somebody's face, which is unfortunate because you may have scarring with this. Not necessarily though. And the advantage of it is that you may have a shorter healing time. And it holds the ends of the wound tightly closed, which is good for preventing infection. And it can be good cosmetically. You can actually, depending on the situation, avoid scarring with it. And then the third kind is surgical glue or Dermabond. Important not to use extra material there for comfort reasons as well as efficiency. It is what's called exothermic. Anyone know what exothermic is from chemistry? Releases heat, right? It produces heat, so that can be a little bit uncomfortable. So that's a third method that may be indicated. So you have to close the wound, and we'll talk about these different methods because they raise different halachic issues. And then the last step in the process is, sorry, no what? Yeah, covering the wound. Right, your last step is to cover it. You know, bandage, band-aid, exactly. Okay. There actually was a study that was done in the British Medical Journal that said that stitches do not improve aesthetic appearances and have a longer healing time. Don't know. That's for the doctors to figure out. When we're talking about a wound, we're talking about a laceration, right? It's another term that gets used for it. What concerns do we have in terms of taking care of it? Like what's the level of need for the patient? What are we talking about? Yeah.
Does it depend on how severe the wound is?
On how what?
How severe the wound is.
Potentially, yes. But do a little more in terms of defining. What would you say are the factors we need to consider when determining the level of need. One factor is what Bailey said, how severe the wound is. Okay. What else? Yeah. I'm sorry?
If it's like mixed up polar, like Polish and
but what are the factors? Those are the options.
If they're bedridden, they need medicine.
Why would somebody be bedridden from a wound?
I don't know. If it's in like your
blood. Let's say you had to deal with an open wound from surgery.
Right. So go back to what we had said when we talked about the sprained ankle. If inability to walk is a function of the wound as opposed to a function of pain, it's not relevant. The fact that somebody is not able to walk because they have a sprained ankle does not make them Yared Lemishkov or Nofel Lemishkov. Same thing here. If it's a cut on their foot and therefore they can't walk, that does not make them a Chol HaShem B'Sakana. Yeah, Rebecca.
Do you think it caused bigger problems when you treated?
What kind of problems?
Like long-term infection,
sorry?
An infection.
Right, infection, sepsis. These are concerns that may come up. The fact that it could become life-threatening as a result primarily of infection. So that's a concern. There were other hands I saw. Yeah?
It may be danger to an aver.
Sakana's aver, right? Theoretically, is there a danger to a body part that it's not going to function well? I wouldn't think of that with a laceration unless we're talking about like almost severing a person's finger or something like that. For those who are eating, I apologize. Sorry? Right. So yes, a cut that goes into a blood vessel, then you could be, the person could be in sakana territory at that point. What if it's a child? Right? We talked about the different ages at which a child would be considered a chol hashein bo sakana. So, is this child a year old? Is this child 2 years old? Is this child 8 years old? Which view do we take? That's a consideration as well. Theoretically, the child could be chol hashein bo sakana. Most likely, the type of cuts that we're talking about are pretty minor. There's pain, but there's no illness. So it may be called mechush, or if it's more significant, it may be called miktas choli, with the understanding that if it could become life-threatening after Shabbos, or life-threatening at some point, that may be a different story. It's unlikely for a person to be in danger for blood loss from a simple laceration. Again, assuming it did not, go into a blood vessel, which is a whole different story. But we have these fears of infection. So you need to determine the level of need. Julie?
Wait, so did you say it's usually Mechush or Mechush?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah.
But, again, go back to what I said to you before. You have to be able to justify what you call it. Like I asked on the quiz, you have to be able to justify. It isn't enough to say, well, I think it's miktas choli. Explain to me why it's miktas choli, or explain to me why it's mechush or ein bo sakana for that matter, or sakana sever. Yeah. What do you think? It's a good question. What do you think? Sorry? I don't know. Tell me. I'm asking you. Like, what would determine? You're asking a good question. It could lead to yesh bo sakana. That is true. Yeah. Anybody able to answer this question? It's a good question. It could lead to a sakana situation, right? And therefore, what is its status right now? Safek sakana, sakana sever, yesh bo sakana. What we're really asking, the question that Naomi is putting in front of the class to consider is, right now, this is not a situation of danger. Right now, this person is, presumably healthy. Shira, just picking on you because you're right in front of Naomi. Somebody who is not in danger right now, but they could become in danger. Right now there's no infection, right? But the infection could come. So, I don't know, how would you classify them?
Well, is the infection coming on Shabbos or?
Good. That's what we need to consider. Is this person in danger on Shabbos, or is this person in danger 3 days from now? If they're not in danger on Shabbos, The fact that they could enter into danger after Shabbos may say, okay, then after Shabbos I should do something about it. Now, there's a dicey in-between, which is they could contract the infection starting on Shabbos, but it's still treatable before it's going to be an issue. It won't be an issue for them until Tuesday. Right?
It's not...
Correct.
The
infection
would be happening after Shabbos, not through the pyramid, to make it more of a problem.
Right. So all of this is why we need to study this. This is why this is a good question. So this is very important if you think of the four steps, right? Bless you. The stopping the bleeding, this is not as relevant for. It's relevant when we talk about cleaning the wound and what we would do in terms of cleaning the wound as well as what we would do in terms of closing the wound. Right? It's an issue for cleaning it. How important is it that we clean it? Would it justify bringing some materials to clean it, let's say, through a public domain on Shabbos, as well as the methods I'm going to use to close the wound? Right? Stitches could be a problem of what? Tofer maybe, or? Nope. Sorry? That's interesting. When the needle goes in and out of the skin, potentially does it cause more bleeding? What else? You ever sew something? How many people here have sewn something? Okay, so we have a subset of the group that by experience knows what the answer is to this question. What else comes up when you are stitching something besides the possibility of tofer or making... Ripping, because you have to get the length of thread that you need. Making holes, you mean making holes in the person's skin?
Yeah. Well, right.
Making a knot. That's the biggest problem in this.
What if you don't tie it?
Well, what's going to happen to the stitches? Right, we have a lot of experience sewing. The tying off the knot at the end is going to be a major issue. So we have a lot of concerns here, and we need to define what our risk is that's going to justify, you know, doing that. What level of illness does this person have? Yeah.
I don't know if this helps. Bless you. In terms of tying the knot, you said, someone was bringing up the review that said temporary could be up to a week, so stitches only go for a week.
Good. So maybe we'll be okay in the event that this knot is not meant to last. Right? Maybe it's not. I mean, stitches tend to last more than a week, I think. I don't know if we... I mean, you have to distinguish between... First of all, we have to talk about dissolving stitches versus regular stitches. You're shaking your head no. You think stitches are less than a week?
Exactly.
They call you back after a week. Okay. I know of cases, including recent ones, where it was more, but bless you, it could depend on the type of laceration we're talking about, but I don't know.
In my experience, is it?
Okay. So let's talk this through, the concern for infection. As a general rule, if a condition is not going to become dangerous until after Shabbos, you have to wait till after Shabbos to treat it. That's the basic principle. This emerges from an apparent conflict between two different passages of Gemara regarding the issue of nursing on Shabbos. I mentioned this issue very briefly. It came up in a source pretty early on in the semester. And now we see the Gemara that it comes from two different passages of Gemara. The issue involved, the potential, first of all, let me say very straightforward, it is 100% allowed for a baby to nurse on Shabbos. This is not a thing. This is not a concern. This is not a consideration. However, Where this will come up as an issue is someone who is not a baby drinking from an animal on Shabbos. We're not talking about, you know, a human being nursing a baby. That's not what we're talking about, or a baby nursing from an animal for that matter. We're talking about what would happen with with somebody who's not a baby. They want milk. Pre-refrigeration, your best way to get milk was straight from the animal. So they want to draw milk out of the animal. And the problem with that is that in order to produce the milk, the act itself of drawing out the milk involves breaking up a little bit this surface of the udder of the animal from which the milk emerges. And breaking it up is considered a tolda of a malacha called dush. Dush means threshing. Remember the process for grain. When you take grain that you've harvested and you want to get the kernel from inside. Exactly. So one of the steps is threshing the grain, where you break up the shell, and then you have access to the kernel inside. So here you're breaking up the surface of the udder in order to get the milk that's inside. Danielle.
What about when it's younger, it's longer, and then there's this in a
Right. So the issue of how do we take care of dairy animals that need to actually produce milk is a good one. The modern solution is that they have machines that are actually set up in advance, and the animal is led into that space, and then the animal is able to produce milk that way. There's a whole thing with timers and so on. Or you have non-Jews who are working on the farm, and they take care of it. There are other issues and other ways to deal with it. Sorry. Right. So we would not drink the milk. The milk would go to waste. That's part of it. Part of the heter is the fact that you're not going to use the milk. So going back to this issue then of drawing the milk from the udder on Shabbos, this is called dush, right? It's called threshing, and therefore it should be a malacha, and therefore we have a problem. However, go back to the discussion that we had about the different ways to mitigate malacha on Shabbos. One of the ways to mitigate malacha on Shabbos is
shinui,
which is what we're doing right here, right? That's the case of shinui. This is an unusual means of threshing, right? The usual means of threshing is that you pound the grain and then it breaks up and then you can get to the kernel within it. This is definitely called an unusual form of threshing, and therefore it's reduced to a derabanan. Clear? Got it? Okay. So take a look at source number one, please. The Gemara in Ksuvos. This is the starting point. Tanya, Rabbi Marinus Omer. Rabbi Marinus says the following. Goneach yonek chalav b'shabbos. One who is groaning is allowed to nurse on Shabbos. Maitaima. Why is this okay? Yonek mifarek kilaachar yad. Because somebody who is nursing is, yes, mifarek. They're breaking apart the place where the milk emerges, but they're doing it kilaachar yad in an unusual way. Shinui. Uvamakom tsara lo gazu rabanan. And this person is in pain. That's what we're assuming. He's groaning in some kind of pain that the milk is going to help him with. And since it's a case of pain, they did not make the decree. This is the Gemara that I quoted for you when we talked about the rabbis not making their decrees in cases of pain. That's what that's where this came from. Amar of Yosef halacha k'Rabbi Marinus, and that's Rav Yosef's psak. He says one would be allowed to nurse in a case of pain on Shabbos. Clear? Good. Okay. Then you get the Gemara in Yevamos. Yeah.
Is that talking about someone who is or is not a baby?
An adult. Like I said before, babies are 100% mutter to do it. They need milk. Yeah.
But from an animal, right?
It's talking about from an animal, because generally speaking, an adult is not supposed to nurse from a human being. Yeah. So the Gemara in Yevamos, source number two, is what creates the problem. They have a line in there which comes up as part of a separate discussion, but then the Gemara revisits and analyzes. Abba Shaul Omer, Noagin Hayinu Sheyonkim Mi Behema Tahara Biyom Tov. Abba Shaul reports the practice back when he was in Beis Medrash, they would drink milk from a kosher animal on Yom Tov. The point that it's a kosher animal is relevant, but not for our discussion. That's not our point. The point is that they were drinking straight out of the animal on Yom Tov. Abby.
I'm just a bit confused about this. How did you do it? Is it the animal was
in pain? No, the person drinking. Correct. So the Gemara asks, Hey Chidami, what's your case, Abba Shaul, that these guys are just drinking out of an animal on Yom Tov. Not guys, they're, you know, tanoim. But what's that about? Idiika sakana. If you're talking about a position of danger, this person is dangerously ill and the doctor says, you need milk fast, right? If that's your case, afilu b'shabas nami. Yeah, Ariane.
In what case would someone be dangerously ill and need milk to fix it?
So keep in mind that you're talking about medicine of 2,000 years ago. We've already noted, I believe, at one point, the possibility that we would say that somebody needs red meat, right? Remember we talked about, would you shech for the person or use a nevela? Their medicine was a lot more fun than ours. So if you're talking about somebody who is dangerously ill, then why are you saying on Yom Tov they'd be allowed to drink? They'd be allowed to drink on Shabbos too. Why Yom Tov? Ve'idaleka sakana, and if there's no danger, then afilu b'Yom Tov aser, then you're not allowed on Yom Tov either. I'm seeing a lot of, like, an individual looking at somebody else's laptop. This is not a quiz, and therefore that's, you know, fine. At the same time, I'm hoping that there are no distractions going on. The thing about looking at someone else's laptop?
No. The thing you said right before that.
So we're looking at Abishol, right? Abishol is telling me that he remembers, he doesn't say when this was, but I remember that we used to drink from kosher animals on Yom Tov. The fact that he specifies Yom Tov, right, is it just that he remembers a story? This is, you know, one time on Yom Tov it happened. That doesn't sound like it. Sound like he's making a halachic statement. And I don't understand what the difference would be between Yom Tov and Shabbos. Either there's no danger, in which case Mefarek is not allowed whether it's Yom Tov or Shabbos, or there is danger, in which case it will be allowed on Shabbos too. What's this Yom Tov versus Shabbos distinction? That's what the Gemara doesn't understand. So the Gemara answers, yeah? So this is not one of the acts of food preparation that would be allowed on Yom Tov. Meaning, it's a myth that all food preparation is permitted on Yom Tov. From a certain stage in the process and onward is allowed, but certain of the basic stages that are involved in threshing are not allowed. So the stage of threshing is an example of that's not allowed on Yom Tov. So the Gemara answers, lo, tzricha de'ika tzara. The answer is we're talking about a case of pain. That's what we're dealing with. Ukasavar mefare kila achar yadhu. And like we said in source number one, breaking up the skin to produce the milk, that's considered to be with a shinui, and therefore it's only a derabanan, and here you get the key line. Shabbos de iser skila gazurabanan. Shabbos is really serious. There's a death penalty, right? At least hypothetically, requiring witnesses and a warning and so on and so on. But it's a death penalty level violation. So the rabbi said, even if you're in pain, we don't want you drinking from the animal on Shabbos. Yom Tov, the Isser Lav, Yom Tov, on the other hand, is a basic prohibition. It's a lower level prohibition. There is no capital punishment for Malacha on Yom Tov. That doesn't mean it's a good thing to do, but it's not that level of Isser. So therefore, Lo Gazru Berabanan, the rabbis did not make a decree. So you see the problem, right? The Gemara in Ksuvos, I see your hand, Ella, just hang in there. The Gemara in Ksuvos is saying you're allowed to nurse on Shabbos from an animal in a case of pain. The Gemara in Yevamos, Abishol, is saying not on Shabbos, only on Yom Tov. So now I have a problem. Is everyone clear on what the problem is?
But why is it a problem if we already know that Shabbos is holier than...
It's a problem because source number one said you're allowed to do it. It's not that the logic in source number two doesn't make sense. It's that the result is contradicting what we said in source number one. I have two different Gemaras, two different Tanaim, mind you. The answer may be it's a machlokas. But right now, I have one Gemara where Rabbi Marino says it's okay on Shabbos, and I have another Gemara where Abishol says it's only okay on Yom Tov, not on Shabbos. Ella, you were going to say?
Yeah, I feel like this is not consistent with when the Gemara like often says, because Yom Tov is like looked at as more like a light, like,
we're actually more strict.
Yes, you are correct. And that's actually going to come back in the discussion, but you are right. The Gemara in Beitza is maybe the best known source for it, but it comes up in a few places that when we're dealing with Yom Tov, because people take it less seriously, therefore the rabbis were actually stronger in their gzeros. So yes, that would be that would, this would fly in the face of that. That's correct. Tova and then Bailey. Only in a case of pain. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Only in a case. It's explicit in the Gemara. He says that it's specifically a case of tsar. Lo tzricha de'ika tsara. There is pain. And mefarik is only a shinoi here. This idea of breaking up the skin is with a shinoi. Therefore, it's a derabanan. And they didn't make the gezerah on Yom Tov. So that's my problem. I have one Gemara in which it sounds like it's allowed on Shabbos. And one Gemara that sounds like it's only allowed on Yom Tov. So how are we going to resolve this? In order to resolve it, we're going to see three different approaches. And we'll figure out where we go with that. But first, I wanted to explain a little bit of the dynamic involving the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. Have we talked about him yet? Did we talk about the Rif? Okay, so we have. But just briefly. Well, I don't want to take all of our time on it. On the other hand, it's important to know it in terms of how halacha works. The Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, 11th century Morocco and then Spain. Well, he was actually born in Algeria, went to yeshiva in Tunisia, left Tunisia because of persecution, and went to Morocco where he lived in Fez. Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, Rabbi Yitzchak of Fez. In Fez, he's there for like 40 years, he writes a work called Sefer HaHalachos, in which he goes through the Gemara and he draws from the Gemara those passages that are relevant for practical halacha. He omits the other things and just has that. He makes comments on it. He resolves questions in it. He sometimes moves things to another area of the Gemara where the halachic discussion really belongs and creates a major halachic resource, simplifying learning halacha for people who want to know, okay, but what's the law? So that you can go straight to his Sefer Halachos. The Rif has a student. He eventually leaves Morocco, again because of persecution, and he moves to Lucena in Spain, and he's the Rosh Hashiva in Spain. And he has a student there, Rabbi Yosef Ibn Migash, also known as the Re Migash. Rabbi Yosef Ibn Migash is the Rebbe of the Rambam's father. So that becomes very important because that means the Rambam's father is learning from the Masorah of the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. And very, very often you will find that the Rambam and the Rif will line up in the way that they deal with things. So what the Rif says, you will find in the Rambam as well. Got it? That's one thing that I wanted you to know. The other thing I wanted you to know is the Rif's work was extremely influential, and you see it in the number of serious commentaries that are written on it. So that Rabbi Zrachya Halevi wrote a work on the Rif called the Baal HaMa'or. Well, it's called HaMa'or HaKatan. He is called the Baal HaMa'or. Ma'or HaKatan. What does Ma'or HaKatan mean? Yeah, the small source of light, the small luminary. Right, like the moon versus the sun. The idea is the Rif is the sun, and what he's writing on it is the Ma'or HaKatan. It's the moon on it. But this moon very often disagrees with what the Rif has to say. And then the Ramban writes a work called the Melchamos Hashem, in which he defends the Rif against what the Baal HaMa'or says. You'll see why this matters. I'm not just randomly giving you information about the history of halacha. It's something that will matter. That what? That argues which way? The Ma'or HaKatan is against the Rif, and then the Ramban in Melchamos is against the Baal HaMa'or. But yes, you can look in 5 and 6. Those are going to be what is, you know, what it's 3, 5, and 6 on your source sheet. So the first approach we bring is the Rif. First thing to note is the Rif in source number 3 making his comment on source number 1 or on source number 2? Where does this comment appear? Sorry? What tells you that? It says what? Read more carefully. Shabbos. Correct. He moves the discussion. He moves the discussion from Ksuvos and Yevamos, because really, the laws of nursing on Shabbos are tangentially related to discussions that come up in Ksuvos and Yevamos, but they really are laws of Shabbos. So therefore, he brings the discussion over there. Note that when it says 61a, it says Bedapei HaRif, meaning that's in the Rif's page numbers, not 61a in the Gemara. Okay, so look at what he says. Source number 3. He moves it to Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Mem Dalet, Kuf Mem Hey, because that's where they discuss issues that relate to dash, to threshing. So he says, Ve'ikash Yolach, you may have a question. Hahud Garsin Reperek Cherish Nasa Pikachas, the Gemara in Yevamos that we saw in source number 2. You're going to be bothered because, and I skipped the part where he restates the problem, source number 1 and source number 2 are not in agreement. And he says, Hailo Kashamidi, he says, that's not a problem. Dehahu Memra Aliba da Abba Shaulhu. Because source number 2 is the view of Abba Shaul. Velas Hilchasa Kavase, and the law doesn't follow him. That's all. Source number 1 and source number 2 disagree, and we paskin like source number 1. That's the answer. It was a disagreement. That's all. We follow the view in source number 1. How do I know that we follow source number 1? Because Rabbi Yosef paskins it. Exactly. The two sources, Rabbi Marinus and Abba Shaul, are Tanaim. Rabbi Yosef is an Amora from the time of the Gemara. Rabbi Yosef tells you which way we paskin. He says, Da pasak Rabbi Yosef helchasak Rabbi Marinus. Rabbi Yosef paskin like Rabbi Marinus. Da amara filu b'shabbos b'makom tzara lo gazu be rabbanon. He said, even on Shabbos, in a case of pain, the rabbis did not make their gezera. So the Rif says it's a machlokes between the two Gemaras, and we paskin like the one in Ksuvos, like Rabbi Marinus, that even on Shabbos you are allowed to you would be allowed to nurse from an animal. We have to get to why all of this is relevant to our discussion about infections. And looking at the time, I recognize we're going to end up continuing this to Wednesday, whether that's on Zoom or in person, we'll see. But we'll have to stick with it. That's the first approach. Okay? That's the Rif. The second approach comes from Tosfos. Tosfos is living in a very different place. There are no Balea Tosfos in Morocco. There were some who ended up in Spain. But they were, generally speaking, Ashkenazi, Germany, France, England, like that, Western Europe. So Rabbeinu Tam, grandson of Rashi, gives us an answer. He lives in France. And he says, there's no disagreement between these two Gemaras. It's not a machlokis between Abba Shaul and Rabbi Marinus. They're dealing with different kinds of pain. Even though we use the word tsa'ar in the Gemara in Ksuvos, and we use the word tsa'ar in the Gemara in Yevamos, tsa'ar can mean different things in different circumstances, right? Tsa'ar is a big place. And that's his answer. Take a look at source number 4. V'kasha l'Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam was bothered because of that Gemara in Yevamos. V'tirates, and he explained. D'hasa mayri b'tsa'ar shel ra'av. V'hacha b'tsa'ar shel choli shu karov l'sakana u'b'shabas lo gazru. He says, one Gemara, the Yevamos Gemara, source number 2, where they were only lenient on Yom Tov, is a case of a person who is hungry. You're hungry? That's your issue? That's not enough to override Shabbos. Sorry. Find something else to eat. Right? We don't really want you having dairy anyway. That's a side discussion. That's not halachic. Don't, whatever. He says the case of permitting it on Yom Tov only is where somebody wants milk because he's hungry. The case where a person's actually in pain and they need the milk because of the pain, that's a different story. That will allow even on Shabbos. That's Rabbeinu Tam's answer. So we pass him like both Gemaras. Yeah.
Does it say like earlier in the Gemara that he's hungry?
No. The Gemara never says it explicitly. How does he know? Because he has a problem. He does not want to believe that Rabbi Marinus and Abba Shaul are in a machlokas. So he needs to say they must be talking about two different cases. So why would we use the word tsar in two different cases? Because in this case, the pain that they have, the pain that's involved is a lesser pain. This is a greater pain. That's the answer. We're going to see the Baal HaMa'or along the same lines, but coming out with a different conclusion in a minute. Yeah.
So we paskin not like Rabbi Yosef, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda.
So effectively, it's not that we're paskin against Rabbi Yosef; it's that we're saying Rabbi Yosef was only talking about one case. So we follow Rabbi Yosef in the case of somebody who's in pain, and Rabbi Yosef didn't discuss the case of the person who's hungry. Are we clear? Okay.
That's what the Tosfos said?
That's Tosfos' answer. Rabbeinu Tam is the author of this particular Tosfos, yes. The Baal HaMa'or takes a similar approach, saying that these are two different levels of pain. But what he says is really striking. Source number 5. He quotes you Abba Shaul, right? Abashal Omer Noagin Ayinu Sheinu Yonkin Bebehema Torah Biyomtov Ve'asikna B'di'ika Tzara, and we conclude that that's talking about a case of pain. Lo B'tzara Shalcholi Amru, the Yomtov case is not the pain of being ill. Ki Hechid Lo Tikshia Hidim Rabbi Marinus, so that Rabbi Marinus is not problematic. Don't ask me Ab Rabbi Marinus versus Abashal. Rabbi Marinus is talking about somebody who's sick. Abba Shaul is talking about somebody who is in pain, but he's not sick. So what's the case? Ella kigon sheta'avaso mosheles olav v'humis avela oso davar harbe. He just really wants milk. He has a craving. I like that look on Abby's face. Like, what? He just has a milk craving. The Yom Tov one. The Yom Tov.
Trying to apply different cases?
Yes. Just like Rabbeinu Tam, he's saying the cases are different. But he says the issue is that it's just somebody who really, really wants milk. So for Shabbos, we say, no. This is a derabanan. For Yom Tov, okay, fine. That's what he says. He compares it to Gemara in Shavuos, which talks about somebody who has sworn not to eat a piece of bread and he's in great pain and then he eats the bread. Is it called mezid or is it called shogeg? We're not going into that discussion. But he says, that's the answer.
So if they're just craving milk,
yeah, the Gzerah Derabanan won't apply. That's the Baal HaMa'or. Shabbos it will apply. Yom Tov it will not apply. Shabbos, no milk, even if you crave milk. Yom Tov, fine. Go ahead. Yes, Naomi.
So what is the difference between the two, the second and third approaches that the third approach sees being hungry as actual pain?
Yes. Precisely. Oh no, look at the Ramban in source number 6. Here comes the Ramban as Mechamos Hashem. I only brought you one piece out of a long paragraph because I didn't want to translate the whole thing. But he goes to town on the Baal HaMa'or. I brought you one piece of it. He says, Lo mechuvar velo nachon velo hadas sovalto. What happened was the last line in the Baal HaMa'or in number 5, he said, Zah piruk yoser mechuvar mimashikasav harivzal. He says, that resolution of the two Gemaras is clearer than what the Rif wrote. So along comes Rabban, and he says, no, it's not. He says, lo mechuvar, that's not clear. Velo nachon, and it's not correct either. Velo adas sovalto, and the mind cannot possibly accept it. Shelo hayu raboseinu matirin iser shvus, karov nami leiser Torah mishum tavas balei hataivos. He says, they're not going to say, because, oh, well, you feel like you crave it, therefore we're going to allow you to violate a derabanan, which is close to a deoraisa. Shalomach masar choli v'inyan acher, where there's no other reason. There's no illness. There's no nothing. It's just, yeah, I really want it. Like the kid who says to the parent, right? You know, well, I really want it. Yeah, and? She'im kein akarta uparatsta gidran shachachamim barov hamakomos. He says, at that point, you would be uprooting and breaking through the fence of the sages in many places. We can just get rid of a lot of derabanans that way. Right? There's a lot of things that are derabanans when you say, well, I really want it. That's not the way halacha works. And there he brings also the discussion about how when it comes to a Darabanan, we tend to be more strict, not less strict. That's part of the Ramban's approach. Like I said, you can look in the Ramban, you'll see much more. So what you end up with is the yes, Bailey.
I'm just confused as what
the Ramban is saying. What kind of nonsense is that? I really want milk, therefore I can violate a Darabanan.
So you think it's not a valid response?
He said that can't be an explanation of what was going on in Abba Shaul. That is not a legit read of Abba Shaul. He accepts the concept. He accepts the idea that maybe Abba Shaul and Rabbi Marinus were dealing with two different cases, like Tosfos said. One is talking about where it's greater pain, and one is talking about where it's lesser pain. You know, that can be. But not that it's a craving. That's not cool. He's not good with that. The truth is, we don't know. We do know. I take that back. Ramban sides with the Rif. So he ends up saying, the answer is, it's a machlokus between the two sogios. That's really what it boils down to. Okay. Why is any of this relevant for our discussion whatsoever? Besides being an interesting, you know, two passages of Gemara, how do you resolve them? What's the point? So the point here is, then this is the key. Mefarshim look at this and say, those who make the argument that it's pain from hunger are pointing out that in the event that you wait long enough, a person who is hungry ends up in danger. Maybe I should be allowing them to have the milk to forestall a threat to their health that will come up after Shabbos. That's a justification that is brought for this view of Rabbeinu Tam. Yeah.
What's the danger of being hungry?
Eventually, starving.
Like if it's only over Yom Tov and like you're craving milk, like you can wait a day.
Right. So I wouldn't bring it for the Baal Amar. I'd bring it more for Rabbeinu Tam, who says that it's pain from hunger. Like the person is really in a position where, if they, you know, that right now, they're at that stage. It's like 5 o'clock on Yom Kippur afternoon. Right? So they feel pain because they're legit hungry.
But they wouldn't, like, if it was, let's say it was on your keeper, they wouldn't break. They wouldn't.
Correct.
Break their fast. So, like, why can't they? Like, what's the difference? Like, if they can wait until after Yom Kippur.
Well, the difference would be that on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to eat at all. Shabbos, you're allowed to eat. It's just that the way you would get this particular food involves violating a derabanan. Yom Kippur, you have a deoraisa that says don't eat. That's a different story. Shira.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Like right away.
Yeah.
Is there anything that like would apply like this, that to this?
No, because the diabetic, because of the instability of their sugar and the danger to them in the event that it stays unstable, you know, they're considered an immediate need. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's something we'll talk about probably second semester. I don't think we'll get to it this semester, but we have a lot to talk about with diabetes as a condition. Abby and then Natalie. Yes.
It's one that doesn't involve doing a
melacha? One would think, yes. It's very bizarre. The whole thing is bizarre. That is true. Natalie.
I was going to say, like,
yeah.
Milk
is almost hungry. I mean, it's good for you. The dairy farmer is going to be upset. It is a nourishing food. Like, that is true. I don't know what the situation is that they don't have other options. That's unclear to me. But the idea here is, and this is where it becomes relevant for us, is that the school of thought of Rabbeinu Tam, leave aside the Baal HaMa'or with his very, you know, interesting person who just craves milk, but the view of Rabbeinu Tam fundamentally is that you have this person who is hungry to the point of being in pain, and he says, you could violate the Derabbanan on Shabbos. Whereas the Rif and the Ramban are saying, no, wait till after Shabbos. That's not a justification. Poskim follow the view of the Rif and the Ramban. take a look at source number 7, where you see it in the Shulchan Aruch. We've seen this line in the Shulchan Aruch before. Makashel chalal, eina tzvicha omed, right? The case of the internal injury, where you don't know what's really wrong. So we say, you can't evaluate it. So, even without an evaluation, afilu ein sham bekiyim v'chol ein omer klum, even if there are no experts, and the patient doesn't say, I need it, I need care, osin lo kol sheregilin lasos lo b'chol, we do for him everything that you would normally do during the week. That's all separate. That's not relevant for us. Sorry? Yes. Yes, I said, we've seen this before. The aval, however, this is the key part. Kishe yodim umakirim ba'oso choli shemamtin. When we know that this illness can wait, ve'ein tzarech chilul, and you don't need to violate Shabbos, asur lechalil olav aval pishi makashal chalal, you are not allowed to violate Shabbos for it, even though it's an internal injury. If you know that it can wait, there's no suffix, then you have to wait. That's what we paskin. The Mishnah Brura says, in case you didn't know what that means when he says, we know, take a look at source number 8. Rotz lomar, meaning, Shemakirim beberu shlo yisgaber acholi yoser al yedei shenamtin ad halayla b'motzoi Shabbos. You know clearly the illness will not get worse by waiting until nightfall after Shabbos. So we paskin that if it's not going to be dangerous now, go back to our case about the cut, right? They're not developing an infection now. Can wait until after Shabbos to be treated. So you wait until after Shabbos to take care of it. Clear? We have more to say about this, obviously, but that's going to lead us into discussing treatment for lacerations. Okay. Thank you very much.